was the podcast.
Play me a podcast.
You're listening to my dad. My dad shows the best.
Tonight we are joined by doctor, director, podcaster, you name it, Chris Cogswell. Everybody knows him. Yeah, from Mad Scientist Podcast.
Yeah.
And I feel like you were just on, but in reality, it's been a while that we've got to catch up. So I figured let's catch up a little bit and kind of start the year off with everything that's going on new for you. And it kind of ties in with some of that disclosure talk that that I did in episode one.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
So how you been?
I've been good. I've been busy, mm-hmm. You know, literally one of my childhood dreams came true the other day. So that was cool. It was a cool thing. You know, got to high five Shaquille O'Neal. That's not it. Yeah. I mean, I've been texting you a lot about this as like a potential thing that I was going to do. So for listeners that don't know, I was just appointed the director of research for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And it's been a while that I have been in kind of talks with both the MUFON leadership and also with other people, like scientists and people I look up to, and even other, like, you know, other people who I would consider to be skeptical but not debunker kind of people, right? So kind of, you know, the same feel that I kind of have for this kind of stuff. And, you know, and I mean, it just kind of kept coming up where I was, you know, I was worried that it was, I mean, I'm frankly still worried to some extent that, you know, it's going to be something that makes people dismiss me or dismiss the scientific viewpoint that I kind of try to come from.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that like with any good thing to do or any endeavor that's worth doing, you can't please anyone. You can't please everyone. Hopefully, I would please
sometimes anyone.
I hope to please a couple people at least. But yeah, you know, it's an interesting position, because on the one hand, I can definitely tell that there are some and I haven't really gotten a lot of this yet. I've only been director for, I mean, a week, less than a week even as of right now. I think I guess it hasn't been a week officially. It's been going by. That's how busy I've been. Yeah,
seriously.
But, you know, you can definitely tell, like, talking to some people, that there's sort of an interesting guardedness to the UFO community where, you know, some people who will kind of ask, like, no one wants to come out and lay their cards on the table right away.
Right.
Because they don't know how you're going to take what they're trying to say. Mm. So I've had people kind of ask me like leading questions almost. Right. So someone will be like, you know, so what do you think about ancient aliens? And just kind of like shiftily look to either side and wait for me to say something about it. Right.
Yeah.
And then you have some people who are like, you know, well, you can't just put this into the box of a machine or something. You have to think about this from the consciousness side as well. And, you know, my goal to some extent is to bring both camps together. And that's even a vast oversimplification to say that there's only two camps. I mean, it's like an infinite array, you know, of different sectors and ideas and viewpoints and stuff. And, you know, but I think that at the core of it, there is this interesting question of, you know, what is it that's bringing all these people together, and whether or not that is a physical thing or whether it's a physical ship from another planet, whether it's some kind of, you know, interdimensional thing, as some people have claimed, if it's government ships or something, if it's, you know, mass delusion and a psychological trick of the mind or something. All of those options are on the table, I suppose. And the fact that there's such a group of people involved and interested in this, and that such a mythos has been built around it, I think warrants its own study regardless of whether or not you think that there's a real something in the center of all of this stuff.
And I think almost everybody falls into one of those camps, right? Even the most hardcore, minus the debunkers that are just looking for, you know, the Philip Classes of the world that are just looking to be a-holes, to be honest. Minus them, there's pretty much everybody is looking for, it falls into one of those categories, I think. You know, yeah. where it seems like they have some, they could at least say, okay, we don't know what it is. You know, it doesn't have to be alien. We just don't know what it is. And it's something weird. And then we need that formalized process to document, okay, here's how we're going to take the approach on looking at what it is. And I think that that's where you could probably come in with some of your science background to kind of formalize it and make it more.
That's the interesting thing is that, well, there's a couple of interesting things, right? Number one, MUFON has never hurt for scientists. Like within the ranks of MUFON today, there are astrophysicists and nuclear scientists and chemists and pharmacists and psychologists and, you know, teachers and librarians and social workers and, you know, and retirees and military personnel and moms and dads. And, you know, it's a huge array of people. And within that mix has always been people who are scientifically trained to some extent, or trained in aviation. That's always kind of been, kind of almost the bread and butter of MUFON, right? That's always been kind of the hard center of supporters of the organization. And one interesting thing is, like, the description that you made of, we don't know what these ships are. We don't know if they're ships. We don't know what this thing is that people are seeing. Let's get to the bottom of it with a formal scientific process. That puts you decidedly in the conservative camp of UFO study, of UFOlogy or ufology. That puts you in.
I forget which term we're supposed to use. Sorry, Rob.
I know. Me too. It's fine. That is a very, to some people, a very conservative viewpoint, right? There are people that think the question of whether or not these things are real has already been answered. And what we have to start asking ourselves is, you know, either what does the government know, or what are they trying to tell us? What are these beings trying to tell us? Or, you know, the study of UFOs has taken on such a huge breadth of topics where when it originally started, this really was a question of what are these ships, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it was really founded before abductions were a common part of the story, right? And now abductions are almost the focus of the story in many ways for a lot of people. And so that brings with it its own types of questions and sorts of questions that I think some people who are kind of part of the more conservative guard, so to speak, are uncomfortable asking those questions. Well, on the other hand, you have people on the more, you know, metaphysical experiencer or maybe not experiencer, because it's definitely not true. And there's definitely a huge, in the sense of it, there not being some monolithic class of this is what all people who have had an experience believe or whatever.
Right.
But I would say that there's definitely a difference between the metaphysical realm. And we can, I guess, kind of say the sort of, you know, psychic contact realm versus these are things that we track on radar and we can't understand how they fly yet. But there's a huge gap there between those two camps, and yet they're part of the same organization, and in some times they are fighting with each other over what is the what is the correct course of action forward.
So what, I mean, for you as in your new role, like what do you think your main goal is, to bring those camps together, or to just kind of like I said, like formalize the process, or is it like kind of where, what's your main focus compared to what they're doing now?
Honestly, my main hope is to increase the scientific rigor and the ability of MUFON to critique itself. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a sense that MUFON is a very, like we're talking about MUFON as if it is this, and even in my role as director of research, we're talking about MUFON as if it is a very almost like a big corporation or something, right? MUFON is a volunteer effort ultimately.
Right.
And so in any volunteer effort, if there isn't strong control at the top, there's always going to be some there's always going to be a little bit of spread in the things that get covered and the way things operate. Right. And so you might have, you know, you might have a state where all they want to talk about are abductions. And then you'll have a state that all they want to talk about is flight patterns and physical reports. And then you'll have a state that just wants to talk about, you know, ancient aliens theory and whatever. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it pains me to call it a theory, but you know, you'll have these.
Is Sugalos a member of MUFON?
I don't know.
And if he is, I'm curious.
That's the thing. Like, if he is, I would love for him to contact me. I'd love to have a discussion about how we move forward. Right. How do we move forward and try to, again, cause you know, it's funny, like I poke fun at that show, but Eric Von Daniken, his books were, I devoured them when I was a kid. You know what I mean? They were the books that got me interested in this.
I think for a lot of us, yeah.
I think for a lot of people, those are the books that really, you know, the idea of archaeology being being more open than we believed, or, you know, it's kind of an interesting starting point. It's a very compelling story, and in some ways a very compelling idea, right? But again, the story of the Chariots of the Gods hypothesis actually in many ways encapsulates the problem that I believe exists overall for MUFON, which is that over time we have done there's really been no strong effort to say what we do or do not believe is accurate or true.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we've just kind of accepted everything into the mix, right? There is a definite change in quality and tone of the episodes of Ancient Aliens. If you start at the beginning, where it's pretty serious, earnest stuff, right? They're saying, well, you know, who knows? Like, how can we tell if we hadn't been visited in the past? And if we were, wouldn't we expect to see evidence of it? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Versus today where, you know, we're talking about, angels and aliens,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, aliens and, the hidden pyramids of China that are just, you know, salt mounds or whatever. So kind of getting back to this question, one area that I think is really important is us to start really being good about, well, look, this idea has been discounted due to these reasons, and maybe we should stop talking about it. Or maybe we should be better about what this means. Right. So one thing that drives me crazy is with the ancient alien, some ancient aliens proponents is they'll say, well, my starting point is that everything these ancient peoples has said is true. But you're talking about myth.
Right.
Right.
Or at least stories. I mean, yeah.
At least stories. It's very easy to foresee a future where our myths are taken then out of context. Right. Did we have Spider-Man?
Right.
Swinging from city tree. You know what I mean? Like, no, we didn't. That was a story. And, you know, that's a vast oversimplification.
But not really. I mean, you look, you know, a few thousand years from now, it'll be that line gets blurrier and blurrier and smaller, you know, the further out you get. So
and we see mythologizing about religious stories today, even happening in real time. Mm-hmm. Right. So. Disregarding things like simple basic geography or common sense. You know, one thing that's always so funny with these theories is they'll say, you know, well, how did this tribe of people, you know, all the way on this other side of the earth get information all the way from Egypt, right? And the answer is they traded, right? Like everyone traded with Egypt. There was, you know, a huge trade network. Ibn Battuta traveled across almost the entire known world for his time period. Marco Polo, you know, there's stories of whether or not you believe Marco Polo's story is accurate. Hmm. You know, like there are these, it is not impossible to think that trade may have occurred. And so the idea that stories or astronomical knowledge or mathematics could not have transmitted across these same pathways that foods and, you know, other technologies did is a ridiculous idea. And so I do think that we really need to be more strong in our critique of some of these ideas that are, you know, not, they're just almost red herrings, you know?
Right. Or they're harder to put the scientific kind of lens on, you know?
See, but even that, though, I don't think that's necessarily the case. Like, there are ideas. This is one that I keep talking about is Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah. Right. Everybody's favorite.
Everyone's favorite. One thing that Skinwalker Ranch points out to us potentially is the idea or the hypothesis that whatever these things are, if they are things really, they are seemingly able to alter the way that we perceive the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this is a theory that actually I think we've talked about before, where there's this. So if listeners, if you go back through the history of UFO cases, you'll find that there are eras in cases. So you'll start with the 50s, where it's, you know, spacemen in suits, in ships not ever landing. And then you'll have the 60s where, you know, it's almost, you know, space alien girls in bikinis, silver bikinis and green skin.
And the space brothers. And yeah,
exactly. Right. And they're coming down to tell us, to teach us their ways.
And we'll do the shameless plug here, but I mean, but Rob's starting to cover some of that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our Strange Skies.
Absolutely.
So we gotta, you know, we have to plug that, but obviously that's probably going to be everybody's best resource, I think, for any of that kind of historical context around some of the alien stuff. Yeah.
100%. And
he can explain it better than we can.
Yeah, he definitely can. But the basic idea, though, is that the way that humans have interacted with UFOs seems to have changed drastically over time. And so you go from aliens as friendly, cool, hip beings from outer space coming down to spread peace and love to aliens as scary scientists coming down to test on us as if we're lab rats to now today, aliens being telekinetic super beings almost who can, you know, trick us into seeing whatever we want or whatever.
And you do wonder, is this like separate species or is it just a different way of perceiving it? Like you were saying, you know,
right. So one theory of this, which is the grand unified theory of the paranormal almost, is that, whatever this phenomena is, it is purposely masking itself in these different cloaks. So the reason that in the 50s we saw aliens with these clunky ships and these really outdated technologies is because that is something our brain could understand and comprehend. The reason that in the 90s they came down as gray, sleek beings with these big eyes, whatever, is again because it was something that at that cultural moment we could perceive and understand. And that over time, our ability to understand these things or think about them or even physically take in the information that's being presented to us out in the world is being altered by these beings. And so that argument, though, is pretty much exactly Descartes' demon, which is the idea by René Descartes that everything that you perceive in the world, all of the information you get from experience, could be wrong because you have no way of verifying it. You know, Descartes was arguing to himself, trying to prove that what can I know without any experience? What is it that I can know without any external stimuli? Because there have been times where my external stimuli has been wrong. So, for instance, I think I hear my name being called, but it's really just the leaves rustling in the wind.
Right.
Or I think an object is 20 feet away when really it's 100 feet away. And I can't, you know, I'm not seeing it the right way. Right. And I dream. So how do I know that this isn't all just a dream? And what Descartes decided was that really I have no way of knowing that any of that isn't what's really going on. And so therefore, the only thing that I can know as a thinking consciousness is that somewhere in some existence, I must be in existence. I think, therefore I am.
There we go.
Right. That was really what Descartes came to. And so the idea that these beings could potentially be changing all of the evidence around us, well, that's a very well trodden philosophical idea, right? With years and years and years of academic writing and scholarship on it. So almost one of the most fundamental questions that we can never answer physically is intrinsic to UFO studies. I think we should be trying to do more linking of those ideas to the history and philosophy that they do exist with. So as opposed to discarding these ideas as if, you know, well, they're just silly or they're metaphysics or whatever. Well, a lot of those ideas have been discussed previously, right?
Under this theory, is it that it's just kind of one species and one being that's kind of keeping an eye on things, that the perception changes?
I would argue, like Descartes, that it is an infinitely unknowable answer.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we won't know. And the problem, but that's kind of the problem, right? Is that if you have someone saying that, well, these beings are changing the way, whatever, beings, I keep saying beings, we have no, there's no, you know, the question of if these things are even piloted are, one interesting idea now floating around is that the ships themselves are the aliens, right? That it's, they're actually, these ships are biological in some way. Oh, and even that question of what constitutes biological, right? Like yeah. there's all these philosophy questions that are fascinating that MUFON could be using in a way to talk about this subject and also teach the public, right? One of the most important parts of MUFON's mission is to teach the public about the science and the ideas surrounding this idea.
What is MUFON's kind of main focus, I guess? I always saw them as, okay, we saw something weird, so you call, you know, PA MUFON, and then they'll just take a report, and then they file that report, and it's just to keep track of who's seeing what where.
The mission statement of MUFON is the study of UFOs for the benefit of humanity through investigations, research, and education. Now, there's a little bit of wiggle room there. What is research? What is education about UFOs? What is investigation of UFOs, right? But basically, MUFON's role today boils down to a few different things. MUFON has a wing of itself that does investigations, field investigations of UFO cases. That is, so there's that part where we get an investigation call in and a report of a UFO sighting that we think is a interesting case. And we will then go out and actually look at that case and talk to the witnesses and record any evidence that we can find or photos that were taken or whatever. There is a part of MUFON that is dedicated to actually the collection of online claims and then the statistical analysis of those claims generally. Then there is the part of MUFON that is really about the research and education side. And so part of that is putting information out there for people who think that they have had an experience with a UFO or something. So in that sense, we're almost in some cases, MUFON can be something like a support group almost.
Okay.
For people who feel that they've had some unexplained traumatic experience and they would like to come to MUFON and meet with other people that have had that experience and maybe try to find some answers. And then there's also, in terms of the education and research side as well, MUFON is involved in, you know, writing books about this topic, writing books about the history of this topic and the way that it's changed in specific cases and whatever. And then also in promoting the science that actually could help explain this stuff someday. And that's really where I am trying to increase MUFON's efforts. In my mind, MUFON could be a very effective futurist organization. What I mean by that is kind of like the, you know, the stuff that Ray Kurzweil sort of does, right? Mm-hmm. Or even Elon Musk or whatever, where we talk about, you know, okay, yeah, we are investigating these cases as they occur now, but where do we actually think this stuff is going? If we did find a craft, what do we expect? What do we think a UFO civil, what do we think a UFO flight machine would be like, right? What would the propulsion system be like? How would it fly? What kind of materials do you think we'd find on this ship? If there is a biological entity on this ship or something, then how do we think that they would think? How would their brain, if they have a brain, how would it work? Could we communicate with them, right? There are endless fascinating questions that are, you know, really science fiction in a certain sense, that I think MUFON could be doing more to highlight and use as part of its mission to educate the public about UFO cases and the potential reality of UFOs.
So you have a big education role in your new role then.
That's what I'm trying to build, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that approach too, because that kind of gets it away from tinfoil hat perception of UFOs and aliens, you know, outside of our circles, so to speak, you know, where they're like, oh yeah, MUFON, that's the crazy people that think aliens exist, where there is the more serious side to it that's really trying to figure it out, or at least figure out how to explain it to people, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and I think too that there is an important role that MUFON has that maybe has not been talked about enough or maybe even focused on enough, but I think it is being focused on now under the directorship. Current director of MUFON organization overall is Jan Harzan, who's doing, I think, a phenomenal job, along with the other functional directors such as myself. You know, I hope to be doing as good a job as Jan is. You know, I haven't really done a whole lot just yet. One thing that I would like to kind of focus on too is the idea that MUFON is also a place, like, if you read blog posts and stuff and papers and things written by people who have quit the organization or left in distaste or whatever, you know, one thing that they say a lot is, you know, this organization isn't being as, I don't want to say truthful, but almost it's not being as protective of the people that come to these events as they should be.
Mm.
Right. I don't want to see someone selling their self-published book at a MUFON meeting.
Right. Right.
Right. I don't want someone telling members, hey, you know what? You had something weird happen to you. I can heal your chakra for $500.
And three crystals.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like, MUFON has almost a responsibility in my mind to protect people that think that they've had this experience from being taken advantage of. And we have a role then to educate them on what do we think is really happening here? And listen, we may not come to a single answer, right? I don't think we will. I mean, until we find physical evidence or there's full disclosure or something, we're not going to know, right? We're not going to know if our suppositions are correct or not.
Yeah. And why can't they all be correct? You know, like that's...
Well, right. And so...
That's always been my thing. Yeah.
That's the point that I'm trying to make here, right? Is we need to make the best case for all of the hypotheses as we can. And in that process, some of them are invariably not going to hold up to scrutiny. But that doesn't mean that the two or three best ideas or the two or three best viewpoints aren't going to be able to shine through.
So you're kind of putting more of a filter over the gathering part. Like, kind of right now they're in more of the gathering, all these theories, hypotheses, gathering everything and saying, oh yeah, okay, that's a good one. Okay, yeah, that's a good one. And now you're figuring out, okay, what's really a good one, and kind of narrowing it down a little bit.
I mean, listen, unfettered data is just noise.
Right, right, right.
You need some filter, some way to channel this into useful information. And so MUFON has been doing that channeling in some ways in a really good way for a long time, right? We have a really extensive database. We have some, I mean, fascinating statistical information.
Yeah. We both have used it for our podcasts, you know?
Absolutely, right?
We've used lots of MUFON stuff.
And even more too. I mean, Kathleen Martin has done some amazing work on experiencers, people that believe that they've had an experience or even been abducted by UFOs. There is some really interesting statistics about how those people correlate.
Yeah.
Right. If you're doing a statistical analysis of the people that have been, say that they've been abducted, right? Then whether or not it's true that they've been abducted, there is going to be interesting information in those statistics, right? So for instance, if they're all suffering from the same delusional disorder or something, then there would be markers for that in some way, right?
Right.
If it's a disorder or a disease or something, you would expect to find potentially some markers for that, such as age or genetic predisposition or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
If there is nothing going on, then you would expect the averages to be pretty much standard with the population, I would expect, But if there is really high correlation for something, you know, I don't know, a genetic marker or.
So have they dove into that level of detail where it's, I mean, is there a correlation there? That could probably be its own episode in itself,
It could absolutely be. I don't want to, there has been some analysis done of that already.
Interesting. I'll have to look into that.
I think one of the markers that's the most common actually is green or hazel eyes.
Okay.
I don't quote me on that just yet. Well, there's a really interesting book called The Alien Abduction Files where she kind of goes into this a little bit more. And it talks about a woman who had her own experience, and it's a good book. I mean, again, like
so you're saying my wife who has Rh negative blood and green eyes. I mean, I'm just saying.
I mean, potentially, right? Like, that's the thing. I mean, it's all correlation. Correlation does not imply causation, right? So who knows? But another thing that seems to come up a lot is the idea that if you're in a family line of someone who says that they've seen a UFO. Or they've been abducted or something, they've had communication in some way, then chances are you will as well.
And that's interesting because I've always heard that theory, but I never knew there was science to back that up.
Yeah, no, there is statistics to back that up, but statistics is always open to interpretation, right? And that's what I'm saying is that I think MUFON has to be its own strongest critics. That way, then, when we put ourselves out to the world with these ideas and things, not only will the things that we put out there be more heavily curated and therefore hopefully of stronger validity, it'll also have already been given that level of scrutiny that someone else might give it.
Right.
So, for example, okay, yeah, if your mother claims to have been abducted, you might also have an abduction case, but you also might just be predisposed to grandiose lying.
Right.
Right. Yeah. You might have seen that they've got your mother attention. And so it's getting you attention now. Right. You might have the same delusional disorder.
And that's hers could be legit. And then yours could be bullshit or vice versa. You know,
all in all, right. All the way down. There are going to be these questions. And so another actually big thing that I hope to do with MUFON is we need to find kind of the top five, you know, bulletproof cases and investigations that we think are really the ones that we can point to and say, well, how do you explain this? What can you say to disclaim or to disprove this one?
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, maybe we won't find that. You know, I mean, I hope that was one question that was brought to me. I gave a talk at the Minnesota MUFON local meeting on kind of science and UFO studies and kind of in response to some mischaracterizations of quantum mechanics and what it can do and whether you can or cannot teleport quantumly through some kind of weird wormhole thingy and get to the surface of Mars.
We'll save that for Mad Scientist Podcast. Just gonna, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. I was kind of picking apart this and, you know, I left shaking my head and I immediately sent an email and was like, I have to give a talk.
But I think that's why it's good that they brought in somebody like you that has that solid science doctorate, not even background, you know, like, and like you said, there's a few in there, but if they're so spread out, it's hard to get them into each of these meetings to kind of not necessarily debunk what these people are saying, but at least point them in the right direction, maybe gently
and all, or well, firmly. And also, no. And also, I mean, be the voice of reason. Yeah. Right? I mean, you know, I think it's, I kind of keep making this analogy too, where, so actually I was on the what if radio show with the guys that do the What If podcast last night, where I said, you know, talking to a MUFON group is really intimidating. It was really intimidating for me. And I hope over time it'll get less intimidating. And the reason why it felt so intimidating, I think, is because in that group, there are people who are not there just because they're interested in this study or they're interested in these stories or they like, you know, they like watching Ancient Aliens on TV or whatever. There are some people there who are there because it has ruined their lives.
Oh, right?
There are people there who have been, you know, really affected by what they believe to have happened to them. Right. And so,
well, it's like my favorite case with Travis Walton. You know, he always has said that he would not do it again. You know, like it's not a good thing for him.
No, it has not been a good experience, right? And so in some ways, doing scientific investigations on UFO cases is a lot more similar to studying a disease by talking to people who have been infected by the disease than it is, you know, looking under a microscope at a cell or something, right? There are real people affected by this thing, whatever it is.
Are there different, like, parts of MUFON that study the ships versus the abductees or experiencers, yeah. or whatever, oh, yeah. whatever terminology? So that way they're kind of, because they really, to me, they seem like, I know they're kind of under that same UFO bucket, but they're two very different things and very different areas to study.
And that's one thing that I think has gotten a lot better under Jan is kind of the discreteness of these, or not discreteness necessarily, the pushing apart of some of these things into their own categories so that better analysis can be done.
Right.
Right. Because like you said, someone who believes that they have just simply taken some photos. I mean, simply, I've never taken any. Right. Someone who believes that they've taken photos of UFO will have a vastly different experience, and it will require a vastly different set of questions and methods to handle and talk to and whatever than someone who thinks that they were, you know, taken aboard a ship in the middle of the night and, you know, cut open or something, right? Like, the way we talk about it is completely different. And actually, one thing that I hope to kind of achieve during my time, you know, hopefully it'll be a long period with MUFON, will be breaking up, besides just into these categories of, you know, what kind of experience someone had or what kind of research might be warranted, but also what kind of lens can we view this through? It's kind of a factional sense of the UFO field generally, but I think there's something to be said for looking at these things from a sociological perspective.
Yeah.
Looking at them from a hard sciences, a chemistry, physics perspective, looking at them from a biological perspective, in the sense of forget, you know, what kind of biology do these things have or whatever. How about looking at the sightings reports as you would the sightings of an animal?
Yeah, that's true.
Right. There's something to be said that you have this many people reporting this many sightings. Something is happening. And again, you know, I keep saying this kind of to hedge my bets, but, you know, I do believe that there is something to this idea. Right. I personally think that there's probably some evidence. There is at least good enough evidence for me to say we probably aren't the only things in the universe.
Do you think that stuff, they've come here though? Because I know most people probably can agree that we're not the only ones in the universe. I think the harder question is, have they visited us? Have they abducted us? Are they just hanging out like drones, you know?
All of those are different questions though, right? Frankly, I don't know.
And this is Chris Cogswell, personal, not
MUFON. This is Chris Cogswell. It's not MUFON. Right. Right. This is Chris Cogswell. Not speaking for MUFON as a whole here. I would say that the view of MUFON is that, yes, they have visited the Earth, right?
Right.
I would say that the view of Chris Cogswell is, I believe there's a better chance than not that they have, but I don't know.
Right. You just need some more evidence in your head. That makes sense.
That's kind of why I wanted to get in here, right? And start looking at it. I mean, you know, it's like I would be more surprised if it's all made up.
Right. Me too. I agree. I mean? Yeah.
I would be more surprised if it's all made up. And I actually think, like I've said this on my show a number of times, if the brain is capable of building such this complex tapestry of a terrifying experience, that is interesting and worth investigating in its own right. Like, who cares? At that level, at the level of psychology.
Yeah, from a psychological and biological perspective, like, how does the brain, like, what is implanted in our brains from the beginning if this experience and the grays or whatever are just some kind of weird biological deep implant that we all have as humans, you know?
Right. And the fact that there's this many people experiencing it, I mean, look, who knows? In 10 years, I might come away from this thing saying, man, it was all a really interesting effect of Burger King. Right. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think that
But then you're going to get the guy that comes out and says, I never had Burger King and I had the same experience.
Right. And then the hunt's on again. Right. See, but that's kind of the problem though, too, right?
Right.
I don't want the search for UFOs, or I don't want kind of the work that MUFON does to end up becoming like, I don't think it's going to get solved in my time
right.
in the organization. I don't think it's going to get solved in my lifetime, but I do think that there is a way to kind of cut down on the number of infinitely regressive, unanswerable avenues or unending avenues of research, right?
Well, and I think it's good that there is this organization that can filter all this stuff, whereas some of the reports from the past, you know, they never had this kind of formal group to document things, you know?
Yeah.
It's harder to verify. And like you said, future generations will look back and be like, oh, MUFON had, you know, they're a reliable source for these type of cases.
And I think, and here's the thing, I think at one point that was definitely true. I think though, in many ways, MUFON has lost, what's the word? A lot of the positive views that people had of it.
Are you talking like
right?
credibility almost?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or I respect. Mean, I don't know what the better word is there.
But. Yeah, absolutely. Right. So there's actually a podcast that I really like, which is Sharon Hill's 15 Credibility Street. Right. And she did an investigation into MUFON and actually was quite powerful in her critique of MUFON's okay. methods and ideas. Right.
Do you think it was fairly or unfairly?
I think in some ways it was very fair. There's a lot of critique of MUFON for kind of when MUFON started, it was very much about what are these craft? How can it be investigated? Who's seeing these things? Kind of a very scientific hands-off approach. And then over time, as people started saying, I think I have been taken by these things. I think I have had interactions with the beings that are on these ships, whatever. As that started happening or kept happening, kind of the view of MUFON has kind of drifted and started to include more investigation of these things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so in some ways then, for the people who, again, are more like me, who believe that, you know, there is some scientific explanation for these things, and perhaps it is that there is a they are ships of high technology that we don't understand, whatever. But in many ways, kind of the stuff that we're talking to these local MUFON meetings has moved away more towards, you know, exopolitics and conspiracy theory and stuff like that.
Is there a criteria to join MUFON to kind of prevent some of the more conspiratorial people to coming in? Or is it just kind of we take everybody? How does that work?
There's not a filtering mechanism for those that we consider to become members.
Okay.
Because I think that there has become a sense that MUFON is also a place for people who are interested in this subject.
Right.
Right. MUFON has stopped being in some ways a purely investigative focused group to being a group that also is about discussion. And, you know, it's kind of the difference between there's a difference between, say, a writer's club for established authors to, you know, test ideas out on each other and whatever. So kind of like, you know, the J.R.R. Tolkien, C.S. Lewis group, right?
Right.
There's a difference between that and a bunch of people getting together and talking about books that they like.
Right.
Right. And so in some ways, MUFON has to differentiate, I think, between the part of itself that is the really serious investigative side and the part that is a gathering place for people interested in this topic. I think there has to be a really important separation, and there actually is that separation in some ways, right? So MUFON has a scientific advisory board and a list of consultant members who you only become a consultant if you have a PhD in some discipline that is related to the field, and then you are asked to consult on cases. So, you know, we have someone who claims to have been a lifelong abductee, whatever. We might ask one of our psychologists who's on the consulting board, you know, well, what do you think, right? What kind of stuff can we ask this person? What should we not be doing?
Yeah.
What can we try, right? If, you know, we ever found a piece of metal or something, or a, you know, a piece of hair or whatever, we could ask a biologist or a material scientist or a chemist or physicist or something, right? So there is a more serious side to things.
I think what I was trying to figure out is how do you maintain the credibility and yet still maintain the openness?
So, and here's the thing too, right? For the most part, anyone can come to a MUFON meeting, right? They're not held in closed rooms or anything. They're, you know, open to the public. There's sometimes a small entrance fee to help pay for the coffee and cake and stuff that they hand out.
Right.
You know, so the Minnesota meeting, I think it's a $3 entrance fee, right? It's held at a community center. You just come and talk, and you know, you can talk about your own experience. You can, you know, in some ways it's similar to, you know, if you've ever been to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting,
yeah,
or, you know, whatever, it's very similar to that, in fact. And just like at those meetings where you might have someone there talking about how, I don't know, whatever the latest Alex Jones stuff is, right? You might have someone in a MUFON meeting doing the same thing. And so there's really no, and this kind of subject attracts people who maybe are more open to, you know, conspiracy theory and whatever, what have you.
Yeah, right? And I think there's nothing wrong with being, you know, open to both, you know, obviously open mind. You know, you and I definitely have talked about some crazy shit off the air.
We wouldn't have podcasts if you weren't interested in hearing this kind of idea, right? The point though that I think is important is for MUFON to be a filter to say, listen, you can come to these meetings and believe whatever you want, but as an organization, we are actually dedicated to finding truth and being a source of good information.
Right? So there's almost a difference between the meetings and versus what MUFON's actually going to put the MUFON stamp on.
Exactly. And I think it's important to kind of get that word out there. I also think, I mean, listen, a lot of these are my own, you know, when I first applied to the director of research position, I actually talked to a fellow skeptical podcaster, and I asked him, you know, like, is this going to hurt my credibility in the world of, I don't want to say skepticism, but in the world of scientific inquiry, mm-hmm. let's say, right? Again, I mean, some of my heroes growing up, you know, have been, you know, J. Allen Hynek and all these other, you know, researchers that were kind of part of this, the UFO field, but then also Carl Sagan and...
Yeah, the more science-minded, yeah.
You know, you know, Bill Nye, the science guy, and, you know, whatever, all these people. You know, and so I don't want, I don't think that there should be any discounting to someone's scientific credentials or ideas or whatever, because you're interested in this subject, right? I think, again, all data is good data. It's all interesting. We should be trying to get to the bottom of this thing, right?
What was his answer to that then?
To you? His answer was, if you think you can make a positive difference in this thing that you find interesting, then you should do it. That was his answer.
Good advice for podcasting too, right?
It is good advice for podcasting, you know? And so, you know, so the way that I look at it now is I am every day getting to talk to and work with some really smart people who are interested in this stuff. I'm getting to hear a bunch of, hear a lot more about this subject that I find so fascinating every single day. And you know what? If at the end of my time as the director of research, I've even helped to just teach, you know, 10 people that quantum mechanics doesn't mean that you can teleport yourself to Mars.
Right.
I will feel that it has been a success.
That's a win for you.
I think that there is a really earnest effort amongst the vast majority of the membership of MUFON to say, we want to be scientific. We just haven't been given the info. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I just think that there's a huge opportunity here to talk about, I guess, science, to talk about physics, to talk about kind of these ideas that are so fascinating to me that I talk about on the podcast and really start to get kind of into the deep stuff, you know?
How do you see it tying in with the Mad Scientist podcast specifically, or podcasting as a whole?
Well, I mean, so the Mad Scientist podcast will always be separate.
Right.
Right. Listen, joining MUFON is not going to make me change my opinion on anything in the sense of, like, you know, that's kind of a funny thing too, right? I think for a lot of people, when they're in MUFON, they can kind of very easily hide. In some instances, they can kind of hide what their opinions are on different cases or whatever, right? So one of the questions I had to answer for the board when I took this position was, you know, what are the biases you're coming into this with?
That's fair.
Right. Yeah. And my answer was sort of, you know, well, I have a podcast where I talk about this crap all the time. So, you know, you can really get my ideas pretty easily.
Right.
You can hear exactly what I think about all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But anyways, the Mad Scientist podcast, it will continue.
It just seems like there's a lot of overlap with what you're trying to do with MUFON and what you currently are doing with Mad Scientist as far as kind of the style and kind of getting the word out there and teaching people and helping them to understand different things.
My goal, ultimate goal, has always been to teach people science.
Mm-hmm.
But that has always been my goal through the Mad Scientist podcast. And even now, like you said, through my time at MUFON, that is my goal, to help spread science and talk about science effectively. So yeah, I would say that in the things that I'm involved in MUFON, you better believe there's going to be a large aspect of the educational side to that, right? We're not just going to talk about cases. We're going to say, you know, well, okay, this ship is moving in this direction. We call it non-ballistic motion. Well, what the hell does that actually mean?
Yeah, that's the new catchphrase, right?
Right, yeah. What does non-ballistic motion mean? Well, it means it doesn't follow the Newton's laws of motion.
Mm-hmm.
It does not follow a set arc path and you know, follow the laws of a force balance and gravity and wind resistance and whatever. You know, so there's like a lot of meat here, right? And a lot of the average membership of MUFON coming to these things is interested in these cases and everything. And it's a huge opportunity to talk about this stuff and really educate the public. And again, that's another way to increase rigor and increase credibility, right?
Yeah. Get the word out there more.
Is to try to ground all our arguments in good science, right? And not only just good science, good science and good philosophy and just good logic. There's just so much there. And so again, I think that another thing that I hope we'll be able to do, like you were saying, is potentially, I don't know, MUFON podcast. Like, I mean, I don't know, maybe that'd be amazing. I think
kind of neat to look at some of the big cases that they've reviewed, you know, and kind of
pretty phenomenal
dive deeper into them right live on air, so to speak. You know,
one thing we would like to do, and this is something that I've been bringing up a lot, is try to open up the books of MUFON, open up our information, our research and everything to more, and bring in more independent content creators, right? People like yourself, like what I was doing or what I am doing my podcast. Yeah. People that have their own shows to talk about this stuff. You know what? You want someone from MUFON to consult in a case, or you want someone to come on and talk about this stuff, just shoot us an email. I think it's really important that we become, again, a source of good information and try our best to, again, you know, like, it would be silly for me to think that I could turn MUFON into a perfectly scientific organization, because no organization like that really exists. Mm-hmm. Right? Science is a historical and social endeavor. Science has never been, and scientists have never been, perfectly scientific.
Right. Yeah.
So to think that you could do that with a group that's composed primarily of non-scientists, you know, it's wishful thinking, right? And it's, I think it, in some ways it's snobbery of science, kind of turning its nose on something that it considers lesser than itself.
Yeah, but you don't want to go too far the other extreme where it's snobbery appeal and then the public kind of is turned off from MUFON for the opposite reason, you know?
No, you don't want to be dogmatic in any way. That's basically what it boils down to. You don't want to be dogmatic, right? You just want to be open and curious and try your best to investigate these things.
As far as listeners or anybody that's listened to all this and has some interest in MUFON now, what would you recommend for their next course of action?
Well, I mean, so we are actually, in part of opening our books up, we are offering at the moment 25% off membership for a year. And so MUFON membership is $60 for a year. So we'll be cutting that into three quarters. So we're cutting it by
25%. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Too much. I did too much math today.
Yeah.
Already today was full of math for me, but so you can join, and the code to do that is join25. It's JOIN25.
Awesome.
And if you are a PhD or a master's degree holder or student, and you are interested in learning more, becoming a consultant for us, or even just talking about this stuff, shoot me an email. We are currently offering a free 6-month trial period for any scientist or anyone academically trained who wants to jump in to MUFON. I mean, listen, if you decide it's not for you, that's fine. No hard feelings, you know, but we'd love to have you. We'd love to make our case to you. Again, if you think that there's value in the study of this stuff and you find it interesting and you want to see it change to become something that you can be proud of and you can point to and say, wow, you know, we really have an organization here that can really do this stuff. I hope that you choose to make it MUFON, and I hope that you come and join us and try to make things better alongside myself and the other members of the board, and, you know, just trying to increase kind of what we can do all together. So
awesome. Now, I know everybody knows Mad Scientist on Twitter, Facebook. But as far as anything MUFON related, do you want people to hit you up on that account, or is there director@MUFON.com account or something like that? Or
there is a, there is an email, an official email for me. It's directorresearch@MUFON.com. So director and then the word research, all one word, @MUFON.com, MUFON.
All right, Chris. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I know, like I said, it was a little more formal than normal, but I really appreciate it. And I think that you gave at least me a good education on MUFON currently and MUFON in the future, too. So it's definitely very exciting, and I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully some of my listeners will hit you up with some questions and interest.
Yeah, I am looking forward to it. And, you know, open to any kind of emails. You want to email me and tell me, you know, you think I'm doing the wrong thing, or you think I'm silly or whatever, shoot them my way. I love answering emails, so absolutely looking forward to them.
Awesome. Thank you so much, man. We will talk soon. We'll have you back on the show soon.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right, thanks.
That was pretty awesome. That was totes amazing. Wowers. That's really great.